are listening to the Mythmaker Podcast Network.
Welcome to the podcast with a thousand faces, an official podcast of the Joseph Campbell Foundation, featuring interviews and conversations focused on the influence of Campbell, his work, and myth in culture. I'm Tyler Lapkin, podcast producer for the Joseph Campbell Foundation. In this episode, we dive into the intersection of leadership, personal transformation, and service with Dr. Max Clow. Max is the founder of the Center for Courageous Wholeness, an organization dedicated to helping individuals and institutions integrate shadow, serve others, and scale their impact. He recently served as Chief Program Officer at the New Politics Leadership Academy, where he helped bring more servant leaders, military veterans, and alumni of national service programs like AmeriCorps and Peace Corps into politics. Prior to that, he was Vice President of Leadership Development at City Year, the education-focused AmeriCorps program. He earned his doctorate in human development and leadership from the Harvard Graduate School of Education, and his forthcoming book, Developing Servant Leaders at Scale, How to Do It and Why It Matters, will be published in August 2025. His thinking is deeply influenced by Joseph Campbell, particularly the hero's journey, which he sees as a powerful framework for understanding the inner transformation that authentic leadership demands. For Max, leadership isn't just a skill set, it's a mythic journey, one that invites us to step into the unknown, face our shadows, and return with wisdom to serve others. In our conversation, we explore the inner path of leadership, the tension between authority and authenticity, and what it truly means to lead in service of something greater than ourselves. So get ready and let's dive into my conversation with Dr. Max Clow. Okay, well, let's do it. Max, welcome to the podcast with a thousand faces.
Thanks, Tyler. Honored to be here. Really appreciate it.
All right. Well, so you have a new book, and the new book is called Developing Servant Leaders at Scale, How to Do It and Why It Matters, which we're going to get into. But you start the book with this quote from Joseph Campbell. And the quote is, "For we move each into worlds, the inward of our own awareness and an outwards of participation in the history of our time and place." And that idea of navigating both an inner journey of self-discovery and this outward journey of participation in the world feels like it's a central theme in your work and your book and your life. Before we get into the book, I want to start with your own journey. So can you share a little bit about your own background, your own inward journey of self-discovery and your outward participation?
Yeah, sure. I grew up outside of Hartford, Connecticut, in a Connecticut suburb, middle class, wonderful family, just a lot of privilege. The only thing I knew, I never knew what I wanted to be when I grew up. The only thing I had any clarity on was that I wanted to serve when I graduated college. Felt like I had a lot of blessings and wanted to find some way to give back. And I did a year-long service program in Israel that involved, you know, teaching English and working at a school for kids with a lot of needs and just a lot of kind of frontline service work. I thought I was delaying my future, but ended up being the most important kind of professional move I made. I ended up being an alum of four different service programs and led service trips to Ghana and Honduras and Ukraine. I just kept going back to service as a place where I just felt kind of spiritually at peace. And the other piece was in my 20s, I always say I was a lost idealist. I just had this really burning need to find some way to do good in the world and didn't really know where to direct it or what to do with it. And service was kind of my escape. I always felt good on service programs and before I would go back and trying to figure out what to do. I ended up going to grad school in my mid-20s, felt like it was time to go to grad school, and ended up going to the ed school at Harvard, mostly because it kept the most options open. I was still interested in education and psychology and nonprofit management. And that's where I encountered the leadership work of Ron Heifetz, Adaptive Leadership. And that's when my passion for leadership kind of really, I did, I was like, this is everything I love in life. So I ended up getting a doctorate focused on that. And then my career, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but has really been at this intersection of service and leadership development. But so much of my journey was feeling lost and not just not knowing to do with my life energy and really struggling and being in kind of spiritual pain around like I have all this potential and I don't know what to do with it. And I'm sure we'll talk about it, but towards the end of my doctoral program, I encountered the work of Joseph Campbell in a really powerful personal growth experience and just felt like my entire life experience was suddenly mapped out and explained and reflected back at me in the most powerful way. And so it's become central to my work ever since then.
Very cool. And I think, as we've heard on this podcast, that's Campbell's work has done that for many people,
Many, many
that
people.
for providing kind of a map that we can all use when we have this energy that we don't know what to do with. It gives us a map for understanding that potential, that energy in ourselves a little bit better. Well, so the new book, again, it's called Developing Servant Leaders at Scale: How to Do It and Why It Matters. And you've talked a little bit about this sense of being drawn towards service and then being drawn towards leadership. But can you tell us what servant leadership is? First, maybe you can define that for us, and then tell us what it means to or what at scale means.
Well, the book does weave together those two things. So, servant leadership, on one hand, is a very ancient idea. I mean, all the religions from East and West get to this idea. You know, Buddha focusing on seeing the sick and dying and feeling compassion for them. Jesus caring about the least among us. Moses focused on, you know, responding to the slave who was being attacked. All over the place, there's this idea that leadership should be focused on lifting up the those who are oppressed and the marginalized. And it also has a very modern take. So the modern incarnation of this is by a guy named Robert Greenleaf, who wrote a book on servant leadership. And his quote that he talks about all the time is, you know, that the biggest test of servant leadership is whether those serve learn and grow as human beings. And whether they're more likely to become servants themselves. So this is not, and his idea is people seek power because it expands their capacity to serve. So the desire to serve comes first, and then the pursuit of power comes after that, which is very different from people who want power to feed hungers for, you know, desire for control or importance or love or whatever it is, right? So, and I do have to say, you know, Campbell talks about this in the intro to The Power of Myth. He says the ultimate aim of the quest but must be neither release nor ecstasy for oneself, but the wisdom and the power to serve others. And this is where like the connection with Campbell comes together so powerfully, because he says once you come out the other side of this quest, your purpose in life is to be of service to others, to use whatever gifts you have gained to be of service. So it's in a sense kind of the highest spiritual evolution is to be in the world for others.
Yeah, I think a lot, especially when we're talking about the hero's journey, a lot gets lost. That there's an individual transformation, but what that transformation is for, I think in our culture it might, well, we've gained some power for ourselves, that we've realized something for ourselves, so that we can become this hero. And really, how Campbell described it is we're coming out of a community. Right. And we're called out, and we have some type of a experience, an ordeal, a transformation, that then we bring back what we've learned to the community in service. And it sounds like that's where these servant leaders are. That's what is inspiring you and inspiring them.
And you know, part of it is I've done so many service trips, and like these are trips where you're going to build an irrigation ditch in rural Honduras or build a school alongside a community in Ghana. And then I worked at an AmeriCorps program called City Year, where all these young people woke up every day and worked really hard in high-need schools, supporting students and their academic success. And just these communities full of people who woke up every day dedicating their time and their energy to really being of service to others. And so I'm just such a fan of those these service people, and they're kind of a precious national resource, and there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah. Well, I want to read a quote from your book. Well, first a Campbell quote. So it's along the lines of the first quote that you said.
Yeah.
He said, a hero is someone who has given his or her life to something bigger than oneself. And then in your book, you write, the kind of leaders we need to see a whole lot more of in the years ahead are servant leaders. These are individuals who feel a calling to use their gifts and ability to lift up others. Whatever power they have, they use to help others become more capable and more free. When they seek positions of greater power or authority, they do so because those positions expand their capacity to serve. We need to see a lot more of those leaders in the years ahead. And that sounds like it's kind of the central theme in what your work and what your book is about.
Absolutely.
So what challenges do you see of having more servant leaders and scaling servant leadership?
Well, there's kind of two pieces to that. One is, for me, service was this just deep kind of spiritual transformation.
Yeah.
Of who am I and what is my purpose in the world and how do I relate to the world around me? You know, and I also, you know, my training is in leadership development, and I was trained that you cannot develop leaders without reflection. And also, I'm an introvert, and just fundamentally as a human being, like, I need to reflect in order to be able to process things. And when I got to City Year, which is, you know, an education focused AmeriCorps program that's headquartered in Boston, but it's, you know, about 2000 young adults ages 18 to 24 do a year of full-time service, and very focused on addressing the high school dropout crisis. It's really an inspiring mission to prove that young adults doing national service can really move the needle on a pressing public problem. But as City Year got more and more focused on its service impact on supporting student success, the space for reflection started to get more and more crowded out just because there's so much demands. And, you know, even in an organization where people believe in the power of reflection, it's so easy to let all the demands of the outer world just make that disappear. And when Absolutely. I got to City Year, I felt like we need to find a way to make sure that every core member at least has the opportunity and invitation to pay attention to their own inner journey and be guided through that inner journey in a thoughtful way, in a way that went beyond, here's the skills you need to be a good tutor, or, you know, here's what you need about behavior management in the classroom. There's this deeper level that it's very easy to crowd it out. So the first thing was just, how do we build an organizational capacity where these people who are doing service every day get to turn inwards, turn away from the people they serve on a consistent basis, and think about, what does this mean to me? And how am I being shaped by this? And it took years. I mean, that's part of what the book is about, is just all the resistance, all the obstacles, all the challenges when you try to do that work with a lot of people. I'll pause there. Is that one answer? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I find it really interesting. I mean, it's not like you can just, I mean, there's a lot of people like you who feel this calling, that like they feel their place when they're being in service of something. But I think especially in our culture, which is so motivated by outward success, right? And it's, there's a lot of what we maybe call it ego motivation, right? We really have to know what it is deep down that's motivating us to do these things, right?
Right.
And I think sometimes, unless someone's gone through some type of a, you know, hero's journey experience where they've been challenged to confront themselves in some way,
right,
they might not know why they're going into leadership, you know?
Right.
Like you were saying, it might be influenced by a lot of these external motivators. So I just find that really interesting, that how to at scale to find these people who have had some type of an experience and know why they want to be of service. It seems like that the most important part is that authenticity of the person for the work that they're going to be doing.
Absolutely. That clarity of purpose, that connection, that inner integrity, that inner wholeness I'm clear on why I do this.
Yeah.
You know? And it's actually ironically kind of easy to keep people disconnected from that and distracted. You know, there is this kind of shadow side of, there's the ego need, but there's also, in an organization like City or in a nonprofit, a very, you know, noble commitment to being focused on impact and achievement and really wanting to be, for the best of reasons, focused on
Absolutely.
that stuff,
Yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
But it's just it's a missed opportunity to have folks run so fast and so hard that it's like, let them finish this, and then 5 years later they'll start to understand how it shaped them and what it meant to them. You know, we can give them spaces.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a lot of that too. You know, it's only through the work or through the journey that they're learning these things of, oh, this is why I really, have been motivated to do this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, so you talked about it a little bit, but let's get into how you first encountered Joseph Campbell and what that meant to you.
Yeah. So, I told you the story of how I did all these service programs, just chose to go to grad school, found kind of this adaptive leadership world, and I was getting to the end of my doctorate and still didn't know. Amazingly, still didn't know what I wanted to do with my life or didn't know what my career would be. And it was, it's one thing when you're 18 or 20. I was 31 at that point, and it was really hard. And some cousins who I'm very close to said you should go do this, the New Warrior Training Adventure by an organization called the Mankind Project, which creates this rite of passage experience. It's part of the men's movement, and it's really informed and crafted according to Joseph Campbell's framework of kind of an initiation. And it was one of the most powerful experiences I've ever had, and a lot of kind of turning to confront yourself and do a lot of personal growth. And it was my first time even hearing about Joseph Campbell. And it is hard to overstate how just seen I felt. I mean, for years I was like, I'm lost in the woods. I don't know where I am. I don't know which way to go. And then Joseph Campbell shows up and talking about the Knights of the Round Table, and you enter the forest where there is no path. And I was like, this is literally the experience I've been having. And suddenly there's a map and a way of understanding it. And so it was my first encounter. And then he took over my soul. I mean, I just had to read like every word he's written. And I'm an academic. I read a lot. I have a lot of thinkers who have shaped me and who I value, but nobody just kind of grabbed me and said, this is the universe. You need to understand this.
Are there any aspects of his work that really grabbed you and pulled you in, like anything specifically?
I mean, where to start on that? There's so much, but what comes up is his idea that myths are transparent to transcendence,
Yeah.
and that all these stories point beyond themselves to universal patterns. And once you kind of put that pair of glasses on, you see these human themes just reappearing and reemerging and evolving, but coming back in endlessly creative ways, but also with this underlying unity, and just gave me the sense of being at home in the universe, of not like what's the right path or the wrong path, we're the good guys, we're the bad guys, just here is this universal pattern that all of us in our own ways can live out, and it connects us to everybody else who's on that kind of journey. And it changed everything for me.
I had a very similar experience, and growing up with parents from different faith backgrounds, and his work really, it showed that all these stories that maybe before we just see as stories, they're actually they're energies that are flowing through us and through human beings.
Yes.
And if we can see them like that they're so instructive for the way that we can open to life.
Yeah.
And yeah, and
Yeah.
it seems like that really it gave you some sense of your place, it gave you a little bit more
Yeah.
depth
And what,
to.
the paradox is it felt like the most intimate personal truths. And at the same time, they're totally universal experiences
Yeah.
that have nothing to do with me, really. And and that, like, if I can get beyond my own egos and fears and hungers to just be open to the human experience, then suddenly I'm connected to all these people around the world from completely different cultures, and there's just like a wholeness and a unity and a peace to it that is, I didn't know I was looking for it, but I was like, this is what I've been looking for once I found it.
Well, so how does Campbell's work, how does your experience with reading everything that he wrote, how does
Yeah.
that relate to your efforts to in leadership and in servant leadership?
Yeah. So there's this question of how can we effectively invite people into a journey of inner development in a work context? I told you I first encountered Campbell in a very powerful personal growth experience. That's a particular type of container. I was working at a nonprofit, and the question is like, what can you do in a conference room on a Tuesday morning? How do
Sure.
we invite people into that in a way that's clearly not just a technical skill building? Like we want you to explore your way of being.
Right.
And I know for me, like Campbell gave this whole framework. And one thing that was really exciting about City Year was it was founded by these two guys, Michael Brown and Alan Kazee. And Michael Brown has said very clearly that one of the things that inspired him to start City Year was seeing Joseph Campbell and the Bill Moyers interview. So there was a very authentic, kind of honest, Campbell had been part of the foundation of this organization,
Okay.
but as the organization grew, less and less people talked about that and were skillful at helping core members frame their experience through that. So the first thing was, can we create a curriculum that provides every core member with this framing? And when I first did this, I was deep in my like reading everything phase, and we just went Campbell crazy. I talk about in the book, like we had every core member, are you in the belly of the whale right now? Have you crossed the threshold? Or like we just and the vast majority were like, this is completely hokey and ridiculous. I have real important work to do. Leave me alone with the Joseph Campbell thing. So what we realized was to dial it way back and just give people the basic three-stage journey. Like we invite you to think about your year of service as this journey where you depart the familiar, you face the road of trials, where you are tested and challenged, and you get gifts from doing hard things, and then you find a way to use those gifts to be of service to others. And this is your own journey, and we're going to hold a space for you to process it and stay connected to it. And that provided a framework that was a key part of really doing this work at scale, which was both personally meaningful for me as somebody whose life had been changed by Campbell, and it was very honest for the organization to, make this kind of part of every AmeriCorps member's experience.
Sure. Yeah, it seems like not everyone with the same mythic background will be able to identify with all those things right away. But if you can provide the basic separation, initiation, return, like, oh, okay, I can see how that could be applicable to what I'm doing here. Right. So it seems like the hero's journey framework has served your work in a big way. And it served you in a big way. Can you maybe just expand upon?
So it took me years to figure out how to do this. And, there
Yeah.
were a lot of people who were like, they just don't like reflection. They resist it. They don't know what to talk about if you give them space for this. There were a lot of really kind of educational, kind of tactical challenges about how to do this. But eventually, I figured out something that worked. And what's exciting is, after figuring that out, I got recruited to be the chief program officer at an organization called the New Politics Leadership Academy, which is a nonpartisan nonprofit focused on bringing more of these servant leaders into politics. So, military vets, alumni of National Service Program like AmeriCorps or Peace Corps. We eventually opened it up to people who had chosen careers in healthcare or education. Again, people who had proven through their life choices they are in the world to be of service to others, and not enough of them choose to go into politics. And we
Yeah.
wanted to change that. And so, over 7 years, I was there for 7 years, and we built this sequence of programs grounded in Joseph Campbell that invited a lot of these folks to, the program was called Answering the Call, completely inspired by Joseph Campbell. And it wasn't a candidate training, it was a discernment process of you have spent your life serving. Do you feel called to serve again through politics? And it proved to be effective at recruiting and developing people who went on to run for everything from school board to Congress, and it was all grounded in Joseph Campbell.
Wow. Wow. So I want to, you mentioned that quote, Robert Greenleaf, and I want to read the quote because I think it's really important.
Yeah, it's central to this.
So Robert Greenleaf, he coined the term servant leadership. He wrote, the best test of servant leadership is, do those served grow as persons? Do they, while being served, become healthier, wiser, freer, more autonomous, more likely themselves to become servants? And what is the effect on the least privileged in society? Will they benefit or at least not be further deprived? And it frames leadership as not just holding power, but as a responsibility to empower others,
Yes.
especially the most vulnerable.
Yeah.
So, you know, in your experience, what are the key qualities that allow of a person who is going to be able to do this type of work?
Yeah. I mean, one answer to that is somebody who's had an experience of serving others and learning, like, if I really want to have an impact on a community or this issue, I've personally had the experience of ideally working alongside people with different backgrounds to achieve this shared mission. And you learn a lot from that experience, which is one of the reasons why, I'm such a fan of national service and military service as kind of character shaping experiences that are really powerful, you know. But the other piece is even folks with the most noble intentions have a shadow. All of us have a shadow, you know, and this is where Campbell and Jung's work really starts to resonate of to be whole is to have a shadow. And so even if we have an intention to go out and be of service to others, all of us have hungers to feel significant or to be loved or to get attention. And so one of the things we need to do is, you know, Jung always says we have to make the darkness conscious so that it doesn't drive our behaviors from beyond our awareness. So helping people turn and face that and recognize that so that they can continue to be in positions of power and authority and be conscious of their shadow so they don't fall into that and start acting from that place. Because they have power to do it.
So there's a lot of shadow work out there, and it's important for all of us to better understand ourselves and to, you know, to live life in the most authentic way that we can, or just to continue growing as humans. But in your work, how do you help people to recognize their shadow and then to integrate what they've learned?
You know, again, the part of what I've learned with scale is you give up some element of depth for scale. Like, so I found a way to do it that's really calibrated for kind of professional environments, which for understandable reasons, the concept of shadow, a lot of people are talking about it right now. And it's always been big in the therapy world and the personal growth world. But, you know, this question of can you have people again on a Tuesday morning in the conference room do this work? I've found a way, again, kind of framed in a Campbell Hero's journey. And the way I do it is first have people craft their leadership mission statement, which is inevitably just a noble, inspiring vision, especially with these, you know, the people who are doing AmeriCorps, who have done the military, or, you know, care about service. They really care about making the world a kinder, more compassionate, more just place. It's always beautiful. And then we say, now craft your shadow mission, which I want you to look very clearly at the choices you make when you don't align with your mission. So if you say you want to spread love in the world, your shadow mission would be to withhold love. And we're also really clear, I want you to think of shadow as withholding the light, not actively spreading the darkness. You know, so if your mission is to spread love, your shadow isn't to spread hate, it's just to withhold love. And that temptation to just choose a path of ease and least resistance in which we actually don't bring our light to the world is very real for everybody. And it is just icky and deeply unpleasant and uncomfortable to look at, especially for these people who have these big dreams and noble dreams, to be like, well, I let these status quos endure and I'm focused on my own survival and my own desire to look smart and like all this stuff, and to realize all of us have this and we need to work with it skillfully. And I found that that way of doing this invites people into it. And again, in kind of professional environments that are not these really tight therapeutic containers, but people are willing to go there.
Is there maybe a personal story? Do you have a story of anybody who went through this process and emerged stronger because of the shadow work that you've talked
Yeah, I
about.
mean, I can tell my story. I
Sure.
don't feel super comfortable telling other people's stories about it,
Sure.
but you know, I learned about all this on this personal growth experience, the New Warrior Training Adventure, and that's where I first did a mission statement and a shadow. When I got to City Year, I said all of our core members need to be doing their mission statement. This should be part of our leadership development, and we were able to do that to get core members to craft their personal mission statements, which is again noble and inspiring. But as we got more and more focused on addressing the high school dropout crisis, the intensity of the service and the work just kept ratcheting up. You know, we really needed to get better with literacy and math tutoring and behavior management and gathering data and understanding data. And as the pressure got more and more intense, the dark energy just kept growing. It's just people were tired and you know, it just a lot of burnout and difficulty. And my mission is to practice courage and compassion and honoring and helping others to honor the sacred interdependence of our world. So that's what I try and do. And my shadow mission is to practice cowardice and disconnection in dismissing and helping others to dismiss the sacred interdependence of our world. And so I was kept thinking, I think this organization needs shadow. I think I need to try and bring this to work. But frankly, it was scary to think about telling everybody I work with that I have a shadow. I didn't totally want to be known with that kind of wholeness by everybody I work with. And so I hesitated for a long time. And then eventually I was like, well, are you going to be courageous or are you going to be cowardly? If you think this will help, are you going to try and be compassionate or just disconnect and say it's somebody else's problem? And so I chose to do this, and it was very scary at first, but then ultimately very gratifying to see how people found such value and compassion in it. And now it's become central to my work. And there are people walking around the halls of Congress now who have done their shadow. And I, you know, so it's been amazing to see how that commitment for me to choose mission over shadow has rippled out and kind of been important in my career, and it's starting to affect a wider and wider circle of folks.
Absolutely. That's great. I think if more of us were doing that work, the whole world would be
Yeah,
a better
well,
place.
it's actually one of the reasons why I'm excited about this book coming out, because I fundamentally believe we have hit the limits of our ability to respond to this moment without being able to talk and work skillfully with shadow. The idea that we can treat everything as technical issues and just try and, you know, come up with technical solutions without doing this work, we've just hit the limits. And I'm really committed to, can we catalyze a national conversation about shadow as a civic challenge? So it doesn't just stay in the realm of therapy or personal growth, but we understand this is part of our civic life, is the need to own this and confront it and work skillfully with it.
Man, that if we could do that, that would be.
Yeah, imagine that. Yep.
Well, right. So we live in this time of like deep societal division and distrust in leadership,
Yeah.
and we don't have to get into the politics of it.
Right,
But
right.
what challenges, or what are the biggest challenges? There's a lot of challenges, but what challenges do servant leaders face today that might not have been prevalent in the past?
You know, I think they're probably all prevalent in the past. I feel like there's something about this moment where things that we have tried to avoid, we can no longer avoid. You know, and you know, one story I tell often is with New Politics, we have this Answering the Call program for people who have served in the past and just are wondering, they have this voice in their soul of do I feel called to step up and serve through politics? And I remember I've facilitated a lot of those over the years. And one of them, we had a Excuse me, we had a there was a guy who had he was from a military academy, had gone through West Point, military special forces, was currently getting his master's in public administration at an Ivy League university, and joined our program because he had this question of like, do I want to run for Congress one day? And this is a guy who had the biography and the credentials and the network to potentially be a viable candidate. And he had never thought about his shadow before. And when he did his shadow mission, he said, my shadow mission is every politician I hate. And, you know, here's somebody who's been through some of the most formative, long-lasting, important leadership development institutions in American civic life, who had just never been invited to think about all of us are whole. All of us have light and shadow. Part of the work of becoming a whole human is confronting this and working skillfully with this. And so that's my answer to your question. It's just even the people who are like the most privileged and able to step into the highest positions of power have just not encountered this idea, you know? And that spiritual shift from I'm all good and the bad guys are out there and I just have to go conquer the bad guys to the shadow is a part of me and I need to engage in a conflict and a struggle and work with a part of myself. That is a profound spiritual shift. And there is such opportunity to invite more and more people to be in that work and to live with that consciousness.
Absolutely. I mean, I like the politician example where that was his shadow work, because a lot of the times the things that are triggering us that we're pointing on that other person are these unresolved issues within
Absolutely.
Ourselves, right? Those are
Absolutely.
Those are the projects that we have.
Yeah.
And we also have the introjects, you know, which are the stories that have come to us that have been put on us by our culture, by our family, by our religion, or whatever it is that we might be acting out of and not even realize it. And those things might not be skillful. And I think Campbell's work, for me in particular, but I think for a lot of people, you know, he one of his big things is to understand the myth that you're living.
Yeah.
What myth is governing your life, and is it helpful? You know, is our personal mythologies, which we have a guy who leads our Pathways podcast, Bradley Olson, he talks about personal mythology as a negative thing. You know, it's these stories that we create about our experience
that
aren't necessarily based in anything. They're bits and pieces of things, but we can craft that. We can become the authority of our own story, right?
Yeah.
But we can only do that in a skillful way when we have this deeper understanding of ourselves that sometimes has to come about through something difficult. And,
yeah.
Or we can choose, I mean, even signing up for a shadow work program is difficult because we're going to be confronted with these things that we don't want to look at.
Yeah.
because it's been traumatic or because of things that we have had difficulty dealing with in our lives. So that's a reason why they're shadows, right? And a lot of time. So I want my leader, you know, whether it's of my town or my representative in Congress, to be someone who's looked deeply at these things. I think it would change the way that we look at the world, right? I think there's also a lot more humility and compassion that comes out when you've actually dealt with your own internal struggles. And I just think it's such a beautiful thing that work that you're doing with, like you said, these people who are so highly qualified on paper and who have privilege, but yet haven't done this inner work that is only going to elevate them to enable them to become better leaders. And then the whole idea of, you know, empowering the people that we serve, you know, that only comes when we have developed a deep sense of compassion.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to I want to congratulate you on that, because it's a huge thing. And it's just so cool that it's a lot of this work that you're doing, beautiful work, has been inspired by Campbell's ideas.
Yeah. I mean, it all comes back to him, which is why I'm so excited to be talking to you on this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so the book ends with this chapter on what you call the inner development goals.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about what the IDGs are and then how they relate to Campbell and his work?
Yeah. Well, the IDGs are this still young, but kind of emerging movement, and they grew out of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, which the SDGs are 17 goals that bring a lot of clarity to, like, what is the work we need to do in our international development efforts? And it's around, you know, quality education and healthcare and food security for people, just a really, just brought a lot of clarity to the impact we want to have around the world. And it turns out we're not making enough progress. And so a group of thought leaders, which includes a bunch of my favorite people, so people like Otto Scharmer and Peter Senge and Bob Keegan, the expert of adult development, all these folks got together. And what emerged was, we need a complementary initiative called the Inner Development Goals, which brings some clarity to what are the inner capacities and skills we need to cultivate in people so that they can be effective in addressing these really complex public problems. You know, so it brought together all this research and all these ideas. And one thing the IDG folks are so good at is simplifying a lot of complexity, and just it's now this very simple framework that has five dimensions and 23 skills and weaves together a whole lot of different research. But the underlying idea that we cannot have the impact we need to have on outer world problems without integrating a complementary focus on inner transformation is now kind of at the largest international scale, this awakening consciousness. And the IDG movement is a reflection of this awakening. And that's why it takes me right back to that Campbell quote that is on all of my emails, that if we move each into worlds, the inwards of our own awareness and then outwards of participation in the history of our time, is everybody's kind of getting where Campbell understood this, you know, 50 years ago, of these things are too interconnected. And the idea that we can just say we're going to end educational inequality without kind of doing our own work in a deep way is just naive, you know?
Yeah. And with that quote, I think it's obviously the more developed, the more inner awareness that we have, the more that's going to be reflected in our outer world.
It's even deeper than that, of literally the world around us, we call it forth as a reflection of our current way of being.
Yeah.
And, you know, I my first book was called Race and Social Change. It was kind of a study of this very provocative educational exercise that simulated kind of a Jim Crow style social system and the surprise learning of this effort to kind of empirically study systems of racial inequality was the inner way of being of the authority figures called forth completely different dynamics. I watched three of these groups, and to truly take seriously this notion that the world around us is a reflection of the world within us. And only when we transform the world within us will we start calling forth new patterns in the world around us. We have to really embrace that truth. And at this moment when there are so many problems that we are creating ourselves, you know, the environmental issues, we're doing this to ourselves. And the only way to really get past that is to achieve a different consciousness within ourselves so that we start calling forth different kind of patterns and dynamics in the world around us.
Beautiful. So with this book that you've written, what's your hope for it? You know, why did you write the book? How do you want it to be received?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is so Joseph Campbell of the journey is not really over until you've shared the gifts of the journey.
And, yes.
You know, I feel like I'd learned all this stuff. I spent, you know, years of my life trying to figure out how do you create this kind of thing. And I really had the sense of like, you're not done until you write it up and share it with the world. So there's that very Campbell dimension to things. But also, you know, I spent years doing this and then discovered this Inner Development Goal Initiative. And it's really a moment where a lot of organizations and communities and institutions are starting to realize like we need some thoughtful approach to inner work. And I do hope that, you know, as I say in the book, when, you know, I'm a coach and I do a lot of work with individuals, and that's very meaningful. I'm an educator, leadership educator. I've spent a lot of time in classrooms with groups of people. Those two kind of contexts are leadership development. But what I read about in the book is building a leadership development system where you are building an organizational capacity to create these experiences at scale. Mm. And I just learned a lot about way organizations resist that stuff, where the obstacles that come up, and it doesn't show up if you're doing the more personal work. And it is really tricky to understand where it comes from and how to get around it. And so that's my hope, is that at this moment when so many different kind of institutions are waking up to the need to do this, that this helps a lot of them do it powerfully and effectively, and hopefully take a little less time and make a few less mistakes than it took me as I was stumbling my way through it.
Absolutely. If someone could take away a major insight or one insight from your book, what would you like it to be?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I mean, this idea that we were just talking about, that the world around us is a reflection of the world within us. And if the world we are living in now is at war with itself and divided against itself, then it's because our inner lives, it's kind of a reflection of our inner lives. And each of us has an ability, and I think a responsibility, to say yes to our own journey and to take seriously our need to confront our own shadow and find our own path and figure out how do we use whatever gifts we have to be of service to others. And it just couldn't be more important at this moment to have everybody awakening to that responsibility and that joy of I'm gonna take existential responsibility for my life and find a way to be of service.
I'm just curious, in your own life and in your own journey with this, what have been tools or practices that have helped you to get more in touch with your shadow side and get more in touch with that deeper aspect? I mean, maybe, you know, some people, other mythologists call it the soul. You know, what have been things that have enabled you to get closer to that part of yourself, to get clarity around that?
What comes to mind is a story that was kind of my most powerful moment of adult development.
Yeah.
Which I hope is a relevant thing. But I call it the semester that changed my life in grad school, where I told you that I took this class on adaptive leadership with Ron Heifetz, which was all about how systems change or resist change. The same semester, I took a class with Carol Gilligan, the famous feminist psychologist, whose work is around In a Different Voice. And so her big kind of contribution was, there was a guy named Lawrence Kohlberg who was did moral development, and he said everybody thinks in terms of kind of hierarchies, like the highest level of moral reasoning is you think in terms of universal truths. And Carol Gilligan realized that a bunch of the women she interviewed never got to that level and were kind of framed as less morally developed. And she came up with this theory that they actually have a different voice. They reason morally in a different kind of way. And it's much more about being connected to a web of relationships and managing all these relationships in a web. And it's not about a hierarchy. So I was like in this conversation and seeing how powerful this was for all the other students in the class. And at the same time, I'm in this leadership class where we had to share leadership failures in small groups, and people in the group had to find the failure. And I, in that group, I would just, every meeting, I would sit at the head of the table and just tell everybody what they did wrong. Just like, I thought I was being so effective and skillful of, this is what we're supposed to do, is find the answers and fix the problems. And it was a bunch of women in that class were getting angrier and angrier that I was just taking over and domineering and mansplaining, you know?
Sure.
And I was actually, there was a day where I was making macaroni and cheese where it suddenly clicked that it was a way of being, that the purpose of life is to assume the highest position on the hierarchy and control things. And all of a sudden I saw it instead of being it. And I just had this moment of just awakening to a kind of, a subject object shift, where this thing that had been part of me was suddenly something I could observe. And the next time I went in, I sat on the side, I didn't speak. I learned that there was all this incredible wisdom that was able to emerge when I was not standing there telling everybody the answers, you know? And it's led to my entire career, which is now about using, you know, how do we use our authority to create containers and invite participation, which is not about showing up and telling people the answers and controlling people. And it was, for me, it's like the most significant moment of adult development, of just this deep part of myself, I suddenly was able to get beyond it. And instead of just enacting it, I could choose, like, is this a moment where it would be helpful to step into that role and use those skills? Or is this really a time to hold a space and step back? And it's that, I mean, for me, that's what comes up as just like a really powerful personal moment of sitting with challenging, uncomfortable ideas until I suddenly was able to transcend my current approach to the world and have access to a whole nother set of kind of another way of being that made a whole other set of behaviors possible, that frankly is now led directly to this book that's about how do you create spaces for thousands of people that are effective and invite participation in ways that look nothing like, you know, sitting there at the front of the, you know, at the head of the table and telling everybody what to do.
Right. And again, it seems like a great example of, you know, understanding our traditional way of coming at something. You know,
yeah.
And then having that be challenged in some way of in a moment of discomfort, and then being able to take a perspective on that and to say, oh, this there's other opportunities that allow for great
Absolutely.
for great for more voices, for greater flow, and for more ideas to come in when I do things this way. And so again, just it's in those difficult, challenging moments when things are just uncomfortable. If we keep pushing the same, doing the same thing, we're not going to allow those moments of growth.
Right.
And yeah, it's a beautiful example. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. You know, Bob Keegan in his adult development says, like, if you want to grow a bigger mind, you have to be consistently challenged with multiple perspectives. And in
Yes.
being with the discomfort of encountering those different perspectives, you eventually arrive at this ability to hold competing ideas more skillfully, which of course connects to Campbell's like spiritual, like get out of what's comfortable and familiar and be challenged all the time and suddenly emerge at a different consciousness. And that's why, you know, this journey of adult development maps onto the journey that Campbell talked about from mythology since caveman times.
I mean, all these people that you're talking about, Carol Gilligan and Kohlberg, you're an integral coach. Is that right? So you integral theory that that sort of the hierarchy of a growth hierarchy of being more and
Exactly.
more inclusive.
Which is different from a domination hierarchy.
Yeah,
And,
maybe you
you
can
know,
talk about that just a little bit, because I think that will give a little context to your experience that you had.
So, you know, my doctor's in human development psychology, and I started doing some coaching and decided to get coach training from Integral Coaching Canada, which is this approach that uses the work of Ken Wilber, who is really the, you know, kind of founding father of integral theory, who weave together like every developmental theory you've ever thought of and ideas from East and West into one kind of integrated approach, you know?
In interviews with Ken Wilber, he said that he also cut his teeth with Joseph Campbell. You know, it was a big
Yeah, I mean, I feel
influence.
like anybody who's serious about human transformation, the road gets you to Joseph Campbell. Just, you know, it all leads there.
Well, if you had the chance to ask Joe a question, what would it be?
The question that I'm constantly asking myself is, what does it mean to live beyond ego? If we could really get past our own ego, how do we live in the world from that place? And I think his work gets at that in a million different perspectives,
Yeah.
but I'd also be very curious about how would he explain it?
Me too.
You know, to be just be here in service to something from the universe is trying to flow through, and the only way that happens is if I am truly beyond my ego. And what advice would he have for somebody who's trying to get there?
I wish I could give that answer, but that's
Yeah.
well beyond me at this point. So getting back to your work, you know, a lot of people
Yeah.
feel called to serve again, but struggle with self-doubt, or, you know, these days you hear a lot of this idea of imposter syndrome. What advice would you give to someone who wants to step into leadership, or, you know, especially service leadership, who feels this deep call but doesn't really know where to start?
You know, a lot of my work is based on this idea of let's just create a space where people can turn their attention to that quiet voice in their soul and explore it, like bring it out into the world. You know, it turns out with the new politics work, there's a lot of people who have this for years. They've had this question of like, should I run for office? Is that something I should do? And they've never had a space to just sit down with a bunch of people who take that question seriously and think it through and surface what are the fears and doubts that surface when I think about that. Are those doubts like legitimate? Are they, you know, and just in having a space to really talk about it and explore it in community with some other folks who are, you know, asking similar questions. It's amazing. Like you don't have to give people the answers. They realize like, you know, I have all these fears about what this would do to my family. But then they're like, well, I have this friend who ran for school board and it didn't mess up their family. You know, like you suddenly realize you have all this data that is relevant. But if it just sits kind of as a quiet, unexamined question that never really gets explored, it's just surrounded by all this mystery, you know, and that that really trusting. I'm a fan of Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love, and has a lot of spiritual wisdom. And she says she always used to talk about people like, you have to find your one passion. Like, and it's very hard. Not everybody has this one thing. But to just honor, what are you curious about? Like, what some part of your soul is like, that's kind of interesting. Trust that and follow it and find a way to be of service as you explore that. And it can be really much more playful and unintimidating. And if you just keep doing that, you get to a place where you are really sharing your gifts.
Right.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you feel is important or you'd like to bring up?
So here's a final thought I want to share is one of my favorite quotes from Joseph Campbell is, myths represent the wisdom of the species by which man has weathered the millennium. And I always say, if ever there was a good moment to kind of dip back into the wisdom of the species that has kept us around for hundreds of thousands of years, now is a pretty good time. We have this polycrisis, all of these crises, environmental and political and a mental health crisis and physical health crises and so many crises, all of which we are doing to ourselves. It's all kind of flowing out of our current way of being. And this idea that what we need to do to find our way to a different place is to reconnect with the wisdom that we've had with us for millennia. I think that's such a powerful idea, this idea of turning inwards and taking the inner journey of confronting the parts of ourselves that are hard, that we don't really like, stepping beyond what is known and familiar, and doing what we need to do to achieve a higher consciousness and connect with our fullest potential. And that's the journey that Joseph Campbell mapped out so clearly. And this idea that we know the map, we don't have to do it alone, and we have what we need to find our way to a better place. I just think that is Joseph Campbell's greatest gift, and why his work has been so profoundly influential to me. And it's very meaningful to be part of this community, which is really all the folks who have been impacted by him. So I'm just so grateful for the opportunity and the chance to talk about this. Not everybody wants to go so deep into Joseph Campbell, so it's really I'm grateful and honored to be a part of this.
Well, we're grateful to have you on the podcast, Max. Grateful for your time. Grateful for the beautiful work that you're doing in the world. It's inspiring. I've been
Thank
inspired
you.
just by speaking with you.
Thank you.
So, where can people find out more about you?
Yeah, so my website is just maxcloud.com, MaxKlau, and there will be a pop-up to sign up for my monthly email. So if you want to keep up to date on my consulting offerings and coaching, and the book will be coming out in August. So if you want to be on the list to know when the book is available for pre-order, please sign up for my website, and that's where you can find out everything I'm doing.
Perfect. All right, Max. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for being here. I really appreciate it.
Gratitude, Tyler. Thanks for this.
Max's work draws deeply from the well of Joseph Campbell's insights, especially the idea that we each move in two worlds, the inner realm of personal awareness and the outer world of collective participation. In many ways, his message echoes Campbell's definition of the hero, someone who was given his or her life to something bigger than oneself. Max embodies that ethos, reminding us that heroism today can take the form of conscious, compassionate leadership, of helping others grow, heal, and find their voice. Through his study of mythology, Joseph Campbell gave us a timeless map. Max is showing us how to walk that path in today's complex and polarized world. His work reminds us that meaningful change doesn't begin at the level of systems. It begins in the heart and mind of the individual. When we take that inward journey seriously, we become more capable of stepping into the outer one with clarity, courage, and purpose. Through his vision of servant leadership, we're reminded that true power isn't about control, it's about empowering others. And in a world facing so many challenges, Max invites us to consider how shifting our inner consciousness can begin to call forth new, more compassionate patterns in the world around us. Ultimately, Max offers a vision of leadership grounded not in ego or dominance, but in presence, purpose,
and a deep commitment to the greater good. I'm Tyler Lapkin. Thank you for listening. To learn more about Joseph Campbell, explore additional podcasts on the Mythmaker Podcast Network, and sign up for our weekly Myth Blast newsletter, visit jcf.org. And be sure to join us next month for another conversation on the podcast with 1,000 Faces.
The podcast with 1,000 Faces is a production of the Joseph Campbell Foundation and the Mythmaker Podcast Network. It is produced by Tyler Lapkin, executive producer John Booker. Editing and audio services provided by Charles Mallett. All music exclusively provided by APM Music. For more podcasts and information about Joseph Campbell, please visit jcf.org.